Hello, everybody. Quentin here, and welcome to the Transmission Podcast. This week is a real treat. We've got Brandon Faber on, who joins us from NordLB. Now, NordLB is a commercial bank headquartered in Germany with massive operations in North America, and they are one of the biggest lenders around the world to energy storage projects. Brandon really knows his stuff about projects and getting these financed and offtake agreements and much, much more. And we go into quite some detail this episode about how the whole asset finance world works. I really enjoyed this conversation and I think you will too. So without further ado, here's Brandon. Brandon, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. Super excited and honored to be here today.
Today, we're going to talk a lot about what you do at the bank and you guys' involvement in energy storage. Let's get stuck in. So from your point of view, what is the role of institutions or institutional investors and banks and private equity in funding energy storage projects?
Yeah, and it's a good question to start with. I think from a simple answer, you know, institutional investors and banks play as central of a role as they can in funding storage projects. NordLB is a bank and we provide senior debt to these storage projects. You know, we're a little bit more suited to provide short-term financing in the form of construction loans and tax equity bridge loans. And then we also provide longer term financing with term loans. And the way we think about, you know, how we size those loans and provide those loans is by looking at the project's cash flow profile. And as you can appreciate with the battery storage project, a lot of the economics and money to be made is in the merchant market. From our perspective, we do take a view there. But I think that's actually where the institutional capital and private credit is best to come in. You start to lose a lot of the senior banking, tighter pricing market for more merchant-y transactions.
What does that mean just for our listeners? So in our industry, you often hear the term senior debt. Yes. What does senior debt mean?
Yeah, senior debt is essentially the part of the capital stack that is most risk conservative. So you essentially get paid first. I mean, there are some nuances there with tax equity in the US market and the concept of back leverage, but essentially, you know, it's the most conservative part of the capital stack. You know, you size your debt where you assume conservatively that you can be repaid or refinanced. But with that, right, there's no upside. So you're really relying on getting your interest coupon and, you know, getting repaid and, you know, generally five years is what we see.
And so is what you guys do the most senior debt? So is it the top of that stack?
Correct. So NordLB and kind of a lot of, you know, our specific industry is really involved in the top of that, of senior debt. We don't get too much in mezzanine financing. You know, it is a solution that we can provide, but our core bread and butter is the senior stuff.
And how does mezzanine financing work? I'm going to keep on jumping in here just to clarify some of these points so we can get deep into them. But what's this mezzanine financing that you guys clearly don't do?
Yeah, mezzanine financing is just kind of a second tranche of debt below senior. It's obviously a little bit more risky because you're second in line, or in cases maybe third or fourth in line to be repaid. So, you know, if there is a foreclosure or bankruptcy situation, you know, you again or could be left hanging depending on how severe that, you know, that bankruptcy is. So yeah, we tend to operate in the senior realm, first priority lien on the project assets. Again, there's some caveats because of the tax equity industry and market in the US, but, you know, really generally the most conservative profile in terms of investing in these energy infrastructure projects.
All right. And can we set the scene here with some examples? So you guys are really active in power infrastructure. Could you give some examples of some projects that you've been involved with where NordLB have lent money to that project in the last 12 months, say?
Yeah, of course. I'm going to actually answer that question, but not being in the 12 months, because we actually pride ourselves on being more of a pioneer to this industry. I mean, we financed the largest battery storage project standalone at the time back in 2021. That was a 250 megawatt project. We then went on to finance the largest solar plus storage project in the Gemini project. I believe that was in 2022. And you know, the projects and types of projects that we finance that I'm talking about today is utility scale storage, so really in excess of 100 megawatts. And to put that into scope, I mean, these projects demand, you know, potentially upwards of two, three, four, $500 million of capital.
And so as far back as 2021, you were financing, 100 megawatt scale, utility scale battery assets. It wasn't that common back then. So how did you get comfortable with doing that? And were you financing the whole asset, or was it just the capacity market element, or the guaranteed returns element? Or were you comfortable with the merchant side? So being comfortable with taking the exposure to the power markets and spreads in power markets. How did you and the team think about that problem? Because, if you, as you talked about being the senior debt provider, the most risk-off debt provider, how do you think about the merchant problem?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. You know, back in 2021, you know, like you said, battery technology is a very novel asset class in energy infrastructure. And but the writing was on the wall that it would become pretty important in the broader landscape of the grid. That first project that I referenced was with one of our most core and trusted clients. And I can get into this a little bit later in the podcast, but you know, starting out with the brand new technology and again financing upwards of $100 million, you really need to have a close relationship with that sponsor and developer that's building it. And they really need to prove that they are sophisticated in broader renewable energy development or have some experience with that. Again, in the case for that 2021 project, it was one of our most trusted clients.
Can you say who it was?
Yeah, it was with Recurrent Energy. It was the Crimson Project in California. And that project, to answer your second question, was highly contracted, right? And I think that's the best, really the only way to that the bank financing market got into this industry is you got to build from somewhere. And you know, by having a contracted revenue profile and kind of mitigating and de-risking that aspect of the financing, you can really focus on the technology at the time and doing due diligence with independent engineers and getting comfortable from a technical standpoint. And then from there, you know, we again financed projects over the years and got more comfortable and started seeing real data that to back up these new transactions where you know, your risk tolerance does slowly start to increase, and you know, you do generally get that comfort level there.
If I think back across the last, let's say, 5 years in grid scale energy storage, where around the turn of this decade, the concept of debt financing became a reality for grid scale storage. One of the things that was sort of talked about a lot in 2021, 22 was the banks will lend to these projects for the guaranteed, the contracted revenues bit, but they won't lend for the merchant bit. But don't worry, as banks become more comfortable with this, they're going to become more comfortable with merchant. And so it was kind of like this idea, and there are some projects that have been financed on merchant business cases, don't get me wrong, but this idea that the cavalry was coming, right? This low-cost capital was coming into this market. And then one of the things that's really interesting is how, certainly in the last 12, 18 months, there's been a lot of grid-scale batteries that have been signing longer-term contracts for, tolling agreements or more floor-based offtake agreements. And my question to you is, with your banking hat on, if I was a banker and seeing that happen, so I was thinking, right, I need to get comfortable with merchant, but I can't quite get there. And now I'm seeing projects starting to get more tolling agreements. Do I even bother getting comfortable with merchant anymore? Or do I just look for the tolling agreement projects?
Yeah, I think the you know, each bank will have their own mandate and their own risk appetite. Don't get me wrong. I think from a personal view, you are leaving a lot of business and financing opportunity out there if you just completely neglect that corner of the market. And frankly, like, you know, going back in the 2010s, the banking market ultimately got comfortable with solar and wind merchant, right? And how did we do that? And the answer there is just really understanding, you know, what are the downside cases in the merchant? How much can you absorb on these negative merchant cases, or, you know, downside or overbuilt cases where you can still repay debt? And I think if you create a credible story from that standpoint of, look, even if you hit this floor price, you know, we can still repay our debt service. And, you know, ultimately that, again, it'll be bank to bank, but ultimately, you know, how you craft that story is ever important. And I think what's exciting for me personally on the merchant battery side of things is these are highly structured transactions. They're not, you know, here's your tolling agreement, financing, go get approval, you know, done. It's, you know, we layer in target cash sweeps, we layer in certain reserves to handle the seasonality, the coverage ratio, and how long you're extending cash flow for, and what your budget requirements and augmentation requirements are there. So it's a very detailed, in the weeds type of asset class that really favors those banks that can get their hands dirty and can get in the trenches, that, you know, those are the ones that are going to benefit in offering, you know, more creative financing solutions for some of these top tier sponsors.
Can you talk about that in a bit more detail? That sounds really interesting. So rather than just writing checks and waiting for the coupon or the interest, is what you're saying that more sophisticated banks are able to layer in managing risk of repayment with covenants, so with agreements around how much, you know, how the business is, the project business is run. How does that work, and how do you come up with those?
And I guess to start with this point, again, it will be completely up to your bank's mandate and latitude for the risk curve and profitability. Each bank in the industry has, you know, their hurdles to make. And, you know, in this market, you know, one bank will tell you we can't do any tolling agreements because, you know, that they just don't meet, those transactions don't meet their profitability metrics. And Nordell will be, you know, tends to operate in the middle of that. We you know, we like to have a diverse portfolio, and we're lucky to able to operate in a little bit of both. On the more merchant side of that risk appetite, yeah, I mean, again, it goes down to crafting the story. And if you're, you know, I mentioned some of the metrics with target sweeps and coverage ratios. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, if you have a highly structured transaction where, you know, you are having the loan repaid and, you know, in a base case in 6, 7 years, but on a solar project, you need, you know, 25 or even 30 years of cash flow to repay your debt. I mean, you know, there start to become some actual tangible positives by investing in this new asset class of battery storage. So again, I think it's a matter of being open-minded, but also as a note to sponsors of, like, you know, this is still a nascent technology, and bank liquidity is generally much more deep, obviously, with the contracted profile. So it's finding that sweet spot of getting a good cost of capital and the financial partners that you want to have. And or, you know, if you're okay with a limited subset of the banking universe at a higher cost of capital, then, you know, that's one way you can operate your business. So
There's probably a few gigawatts of battery utility scale battery energy storage that's been financed now through senior debt. That's even just Great Britain and the US. And I'd be interested to know if any of those projects have failed to pay back their debts, if you like. I don't know whether we can get hold of that data somewhere. I'd actually be surprised. I reckon it's pretty unlikely. So far, you know, touch wood, this feels like one of those kind of it's Christmas 2007 and saying it's the top of the market forever kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's definitely some pause for caution, right? Just because things are working in the past doesn't necessarily mean that they're proven to succeed in the future, and especially with utility scale battery storage. I mean, the market changes on a dime so fast. I mean, in, you know, 2022 and 2023, you know, the market was evidently really hot and there were headlines of batteries making, you know, millions of dollars in a few days. But, you know, as of late, that actually hasn't fully materialized. So, you know, it's, again, knowing what those downside scenarios are. NordLB takes a really meticulous approach in terms of vetting and doing that diligence and understanding that, you know, we're comfortable with the cash flow profile. But I mean, to answer your question, I mean, we financed 6 gigawatts of battery storage to date.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah, and that makes up around 25 transactions. So we, you know, we pride ourselves on that. And I think we, you know, it only serves us moving forward because we have those operational data points. We can tell our clients what we're seeing and what's working and what's not. So yeah, we're fortunate to be in that position.
And so could you share it at all? Is it working?
Yeah, no, I mean, so far, you know, again, this is a personal view, but broadly, you know, we're very bullish on the battery sector. We view it as inevitable to net zero and decarbonizing the grid. There is no piece to the puzzle that batteries really don't plug in and fit there. They're flexible generation, they're instantaneous dispatch, they've proven that they're reliable. And I think the headlines will honestly continue to prove themselves of, you know, X battery projects saves grid outage in ERCOT, or, you know, X battery projects keeps the lights on in CAISO. So I think more support will come over the years and, you know, people will realize this is a real transformational asset class.
Let's talk about tolling agreements for a minute, because the offtake agreement is so important to you as a bank, right? Because that is where the cash flows come from, one way or another. So if you're doing you've got your banking hat on and you're looking at a project that has a tolling agreement, what kind of things are you looking for a robust tolling agreement? What are the green flags and what are the amber or red flags?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think when a client presents us a project with a tolling agreement, the natural reaction is, you know, this is a very conservative financing. You know, you are getting your contracted payments and there's, you know, there should be little to no questions about it. That being said, tolling agreements definitely come with their nuances. Generally, you know, we see tolling agreements in regulated markets. So, you know, that's a double-edged sword, right? Because if you're, and this is, again, a very downside scenario, but in the case of, you know, whatever market you're operating in, if your utility goes bankrupt, then, you know, you have no access to monetize battery cash flows.
And that's a stranded asset.
Yeah, exactly. A stranded asset. And, you know, luckily these utilities are generally investment grade, but it's a serious risk. I mean, we take the approach of, can you wheel the power to a liquid market? You know, what are the downside scenarios there and what's the likelihood of that? So that's point number one. And then point number two that I think the market needs to appreciate is tolling agreements come with pretty strong performance obligations. Generally, we see them, you know, you have to be hitting 100% of capacity, or you have to be at least, you know, X percent available.
So performance expectations on who? On the project?
On the
so
project.
The asset needs to be available.
Yes, on the project. So, you know, when the project gets built and is operational, I mean, the job really isn't finished, right? I mean, you are required to maintain a certain level of performance to that off-taker. And, you know, in the case of these tolling agreements, if you don't meet those thresholds, you know, you could be on the hook for serious penalties or even termination of the contract, which again, in a senior level position where we're offering the cheapest form of cost of capital, like we need to know that risk is very far off or is extremely mitigated. So, you know, the way we handle that is, you know, and again, also a positive to the battery industry is you have these robust long-term service agreements that match, that generally there's some caveats there, but generally match those performance obligations. So you have somewhat of a back-to-back arrangement where you have a counterparty that's guaranteeing on your side of the project and an O&M counterparty that's guaranteeing that performance threshold that you're required to hit in the PPA.
But then you get down the rabbit hole of, well, I'll tell you what, have a go at defining availability. This is a podcast in itself.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we could speak to hours on this topic. But I think in conclusion, tolling agreements are, you know, they're a great product for locking in contracted revenue, but they definitely have their obstacles that you know, that you need to diligence along the way, along with, you know, your council teams.
Well, what other types of mechanisms or options are you seeing outside of the vanilla tolling agreement?
Yeah, I think for the most part in CAISO, right, we'll see projects just with a resource adequacy contract. And the way to think about that is a battery is unique in that it can make several different revenue streams. It can make capacity revenue, it can make energy arbitrage revenue, which most people are familiar with, and then ancillary services revenue. So a tolling agreement generally bundles all those revenue products, and the off-taker pays a fixed payment for those essentially. And then with an RA contract, you essentially just get that portion of the battery's revenue in a fixed contracted payment. And the rest of it, call it, you know, 30% to 40%, or depending, 30% to 50% will be operating merchant. So, you know, that's an offtake arrangement that we're seeing. I think it also depends on what market you're looking at. You know, we recently had financed a battery storage project in Massachusetts, a first of a kind and one of the largest in the state. Yeah, I know in Massachusetts, they have a creative incentivization program through the Clean Peak standard, where the battery project is able to earn revenue through so-called Clean Peak energy certificates. And your project can contract with different sorts of entities that contracts this cash flow. And the cash flow can be quite significant. So Massachusetts, for example, has found a way to bring bankability to their market in a way, because otherwise, if you don't, you know, if you don't have a way to contract cash flows, you're going to really challenge to find widespread deployment. I mean, it's really hard to finance a use case on a fully merchant profile. So,
and at what stage do you get involved? Is the asset already built and past commissioning and online, and then you guys finance comes in, or would you consider financing a project through the build phase?
Yeah, so we generally come in at what's called around notice to proceed, EPC term. It's essentially when the project is largely de-risked of development-like risk. So we're not, you know, we're not in the business of taking those risks, whether that be, you know, like permits or interconnection, something along those lines. So pretty much, you know, we come in when the project is ready to start construction and, you know, delivery of the equipment is on the way, and the project is essentially ready to be built ground up. With battery storage, you know, we view this as a positive because actually, you know, what we've seen is the construction of battery storage be rather simple relative to other infrastructure classes. I mean, you're in some cases operating on a few acres plot of land and putting containers down on a construction site versus, you know, wind or solar, where you could be excavating mountains and hills for your energy, or excuse me, for your engineering design. So yeah, we finance through construction and then generally a period of 5 years after construction is done or after COD is hit.
Okay, so you've got people on the ground, owners, engineers, going and checking things and making sure there's quality.
Yeah, we don't specifically as a bank, but we do have reporting covenants where, you know, we can request that an engineer go on behalf of the lenders and report. And then, yeah, we generally get monthly reporting requirements from the EPC and sponsor of milestones being met and the progress of the project.
Fascinated by the fact that you've got 6 gigawatts of battery energy storage already financed. That is a remarkable number. How far will you go? What's an appropriate amount of exposure for NordLB? Do you want 10 gigawatts, 20 gigawatts, 30 gigawatts?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what the future holds there. I think from an asset class point of view, you know, again, from NordLB's perspective, you know, we heavily finance in solar energy being our primary asset class. And if you look at battery storage, I mean, it just serves as such a natural complement to solar and what solar are trying to achieve with being as the most economic, efficient energy resource during the daytime, but that inevitably, you know, offloads in the evening time to where battery storage can complement that. And from our perspective, you can't have one really without the other. So, you know, we really see battery growth being enormous and NordLB being a big part of that.
And so you've got the ear of a lot of the energy storage folks in the industry now. What are you looking for? What does a good project look like to you? What does the perfect project look like? And then what are some things you would accept given the right conditions?
Yeah. And I think this question, we obviously could spend hours discussing of all of the things that we get into, but I think you really need to break it down into the major points, starting with the technology and kind of what we discussed at the beginning of the call. I mean, you really need to understand that the technology is proven in some regard. Are there bankability studies done? Has it been deployed on a utility scale? And then moving on from there, yeah, you really need to look and understand your revenue profile and what type of return you're getting from the storage project. So, you know, if you're okay with more mild returns, but, you know, you really want to minimize your equity spent as your business strategy, then yeah, tolling agreements and kind of that path to bankability will suit you well, because, you know, you're really going to get the most bank liquidity with those projects and most interest. And if I was a sponsor, frankly, I would really start there and build up your portfolio. If you're on my side of the table, right, and you hear a developer come to you and says, you know, we want to build a fully merchant project, you know, we've never done this before. You know, as you can appreciate, the conversation will end pretty quickly. So I think it's, you know, building up that relationship with stable core clients and bankable battery projects, and then building off of that.
So if you're a developer or an owner with a platform, really the way to do this is get a couple of projects in the ground with tolling agreements that everything's de-risked, prove you can build stuff to quality and that you always pay your debts, and then venture into the merchant world.
Yeah, and you know, this is a very opinionated, you know, viewpoint, and there's definitely developers out there that are better suited, or better kind of suited to take part in this conversation as well. But yeah, in short, I think that's right. I think there's just a general level of risk appetite that the senior bank market can accept. And look, you can go build that fully merchant project, but, you know, that's going to come at higher cost of capital. So it's, again, what business strategy does your platform want to have? And, how does kind of the senior bank finance market fit into that? And it doesn't always fit into, you know, tell you sponsor strategies. So.
And now I'm going to ask you a very naughty question. And if you could do your best to answer it, please forgive me, but how cheap is the money, right? You say it's a cheaper form of money, mm-hmm. getting senior debt in. How does the cost of capital for what NordLB does compare to other capital in the stack?
I think there's other forums on this out there, but yeah, I mean, with highly contracted deals, like so-called clean deals, you know, you can get pricing really as low as under 2% over SOFR, and you know, that can kind of quickly jump up depending on the level of merchant and other risk factors. But yeah, I mean, a fully merchant project can have a 3 handle on it, or even you know, 4% margin over SOFR. So it quickly escalates, and you know, each basis point of cost of capital is essential, right, to these sponsors. So just finding where best, you know, the project is and you know, where it can optimally hit the return is definitely the focal point.
And thanks for answering that question. You could have said, well, that's private, and I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So now for our last two questions. The first one is, this is your chance to plug anything. If you want to say something to the energy storage community, this is your go. And the next one is your contrarian view. But first, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I think as the plug to the industry, I mean, again, we're fortunate at Nord to be able to see so much and to be able to finance so much of the battery storage projects that we've seen come across our desk. I think, you know, the message should be that, again, moving forward, that sponsors have an open mind to the asset class. I think too much of the industry thinks that this is already proven and already easily bankable. And frankly, it's not. There's a lot of nuances, a lot of details. I mean, we only scratched the surface here today, where it is a challenging asset class. But I think, you know, again, being at the forefront of these projects and innovating in all these different commercial offtakes and arrangements, you know, suits NordLB well. And we're excited and lucky to offer kind of these flexible financing solutions for these new sponsors and developers.
And finally, what's your contrarian view? So what's the thing that you believe that a lot of people don't?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. And I think personally, for me, the Inflation Reduction Act is not as good to the industry as people might think.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. And what I mean by that, and there's, you know, a few different angles to this, but I think from what we're seeing specifically with these tax credit adders, you know, we're seeing these projects become really frothy, where sponsors on a normal case basis, by looking at the cash flows, don't need to contribute any equity into the project, or even it's showing negative equity is needed. And I think from a political point of view, that really wasn't the goal of IRA, right? The goal is to accelerate energy deployment and focus energy investment to decarbonize the grid. But when you juice it up so much, you know, there are projects out there that I'm sure that are being built that shouldn't be built on normal cases. And I think at the end of the day, what will be most important for the industry is getting bipartisan support to really supercharge the sector. And, you know, by saying that the renewable energy is propped up on tax credits, I mean, it is a fair statement right now, but I think, you know, the market is maturing, these technologies are getting cheaper and more efficient. And we're at the stage right now where, you know, I think vast renewable energy deployment can be achieved without these heavy subsidies. And do I think that these should be phased out right away? Absolutely not. But I think we do need to start having the industry stand on 2 feet, and, you know, battery storage will be there leading the way, hopefully.
Could you just talk for a second about those adders that you mentioned? So, and this is fascinating that with those adders, you can have projects that end up with zero or negative equity requirement. How do you actually get there in practice? What does the Excel spreadsheet look like that gets you there?
Yeah, so on a standard case rate, these projects would qualify for 30% tax credits. So really 30% of your cost of the project, or really the value of the project is what the industry bases it on, can be covered by tax credits, and tax equity in the market fills that gap of the project. With the adders that was introduced with IRA, you know, you have energy community adder, which adds 10% to that, and domestic content adder, which could add another 10% on top of that. So we have seen projects come across our desk with 50% ITC assumptions. And if you take a step back for a second, right, I mean, these tax credits, again, are being really fully funded off of the IRA. So going back to my main point, you know, in those scenarios, if you look at the cash flow of the project, you know, under standard circumstances, we'd be fine lending to these parameters, but the equity, the outcome of the equity needed in the deal would in some cases be negative. And I think that's a little bit backwards to what the IRA wanted to achieve, is this inefficient use of of tax credits for acceleration of renewable energy deployment. So we've just seen a little bit of froth in the market from that perspective.
Yeah, and it's in the current political environment, it's a very difficult one to very difficult one to swallow, really. And there may be some medium and long term issues with that, mm-hmm. especially now the focus on government efficiency and all of that. It's a tricky story to sell to the taxpayer, I suppose. You know, the IRA was actually a very targeted instrument, but also in other ways quite blunt. And yeah, don't really know what else to say about it, apart from we're delving into this is going to make people angry on some way or the other.
I know, yeah.
How do you talk about the IRA on this podcast without taking, like, whilst being balanced and not winding people up one side or the other? It becomes such a politically charged thing.
Yeah. And look, I'm not saying the IRA was a bad thing for the industry. It definitely was not. But I think, as with anything kind of political involved or charged in the industry, there are double-edged swords and there are other sides to the coin. And at the end of the day, I think what I said earlier is most important is the bipartisan support, because, you know, with the new administration, there is a resurgence of, you know, gas and oil being the staple energy source. And I think that's ultimately the worst scenario is if we go backwards here. You know, this is just from personal view and personal insight. I think the battery storage and renewable energy sector will have remarkable growth to come over the next few years, regardless of what happens in the White House. And yeah, it'll become inevitable. There's such a need for energy infrastructure, given the power demand with AI and, again, the electrification of industries, that the writing's on the wall for just massive growth for renewables and battery storage.
Yeah. It would just be a bit more convenient if there wasn't a scapegoat in the IRA and some of these frothier projects. Yeah. But yeah, well, that was a great contrarian view. I mean, it's quite rare that someone in our space really challenges the IRA. So
yeah, I mean,
thanks for bringing
that. Try to be pragmatic, but also, yeah, this is definitely a personal view, and I'm sure there's people out there that would disagree and whatnot. But you know, just trying to share some personal insight.
And with that, that's the end of the podcast. So thanks for taking the time out of your day, actually your holiday, to come and join us on the podcast. It was a fascinating discussion. I can't believe that you've got 6 gigawatts of utility scale storage financed. It's pretty awesome. So kudos and congratulations to you and the team.
Thank you so much. And thanks for giving us the opportunity to hop on today. Super honored and looking forward to all of Modo's future insights on the sector. So
thank you. And if you're listening to this, please don't forget to hit like, subscribe, and hit all the good buttons. They really mean the world to us, and they mean that we can get to a bigger audience and share more of this stuff wider. See you next time.